Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. We're located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park. And we're also in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. We are very blessed to be able to serve our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida, and all over Southwest Florida. So you can visit us at ellenbecker.com for more details. And of course, it's always fun to put a face with a voice. Today is, and I guess I say this a lot, is a very special day and a day where I feel like I'm really interviewing someone that is very close to my heart and is doing something out in the world that is something that I, of course, admire and something that has really touched my heart in a very special and specific way. Many of you know that I started looking at retirement 10 years ago, and my daughter Julie always says, "Mom, you're a failure at retirement." But actually, it's maybe retirement in the traditional way that people think about it. So I'm still sitting right here in my office doing the interview with my guest, still meeting with clients. But one of the things that I have done is I have found a passion in my life that I didn't know I had, and that's for the education of children, and am working very hard within Milwaukee on a specific program that I have, an empathy program and 10 Big Feelings. And when this book came across my desk, it caught my eye and it was like, oh my goodness, what is this all about? And the book is called The Magical Place We Call School. And of course, I growing up and never thought of my school as being magical, actually. And so it caught my eye. And I thought, I really have to explore this more. And from that, I was able to have my guest today, which is Dr. Kathy Corley. And she's the author and principal of Red Cedar Elementary School. And I've been working in elementary schools. We're working in 19 elementary schools within Milwaukee. And I thought, okay, this is going to be good. And so welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
You know, you and I had a little bit of time to talk prior to starting the show today about schools. And I'm really so, first of all, you're a principal. What do you like about being a principal? Because that's kind of in a way like being the president. and it's a roller coaster ride for sure.
There are certainly some children who think I'm the president of the school. Yes, absolutely. They're the youngest ones. And we want to cultivate that. No, we explain it to them that I just help them stay safe and I help them get the best education they can have and I help them have fun. My favorite part is to watch everyone grow up. And part of that came from being a music teacher first, because I would teach all of the students pre-kindergarten through fifth grade. And then I watch them grow older and watch them mature. And it was always a wonderful surprise to see who they turned out to be. And especially if I'm in the community long enough, I can see them as adults. And now there are children here in this school who are the children of the children who were here in the beginning. There's one person here who is a teacher. And I met her when she was a third grader at the school that I opened just before this school. So I know her very well.
Wow. So let's talk about time. How long have you been in this this arena of education?
I've been a principal for 30 years. I've been in education. I've been in administration for 36 years. And I've been in education for 43 years.
Wow. So you've really seen the unfolding of many different periods in our country and how education has been impacted. And of course, most recently, we've got the pandemic, which had a huge impact on schools and teachers. And I guess one of the things that I am curious about with this history of education. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a great article in the New York Times on absenteeism for children and teachers. And how does someone keep their feet planted firmly on the ground like you have to be able to ride the waves of change and yet to be able to not just ride the wave of change, but to do things and put things in place that help teachers and parents stay connected? Because I know through the absenteeism, one of the most difficult things is parent engagement. Yes. And without parent engagement, there's such a gap. So how do you approach that? And how do you keep it alive and working and fertile?
There are some things that just shouldn't change. That is, high expectations should not change, regardless of the pandemic. That grace, yes, apply grace, absolutely. But we could maintain high academic standards because it was a given. Everybody just knew that's the way we were going to approach anything that came our way. When I came to Bluffton, I opened a Bluffton Elementary School with a lot of other people. And a different principal said, I don't think you're going to like the behavior of the students here. You're coming from Massachusetts, and I don't know what it was like there, but I don't think you'll like the behavior. Now, he's a principal in another school, and he's speaking from the heart. He said, I don't believe you're going to like it. And then the next statement he made was, I hope it doesn't get any worse. And I thought, well, sir, you have something to say about that now, don't you? Of course, I did not say that because I just fell off the turnip truck and I should not have people disinclined to being friendly with me right off the bat, at least. But we're a little bit of a throwback and we shouldn't be. But everyone needs to show respect. Our bell in the morning is Aretha Franklin singing Respect, the first line of Respect. That's the you better be in your seats by now sort of thing. When students are late to school, we talk to their parents about how did that happen. When I first got to Bluffton, I'd stand on the sidewalk and I'd say, hey, you're late. Why? And more than one parent would say, well, because I'm just getting here. Noted. Why is that you're late? Well, I mean, you know, we couldn't get things together. Well, I'm noticing that this is a trend with you. And you see, every time your daughter is late, she walks into a class that's already working. They all look up and they stop what they're doing. And the teacher needs to stop what she's doing to welcome your child into the room late. No child wants to be late, and we don't want anyone to be late because it messes with our juju. You know, we're doing things, we're getting things done. And most times I'd get a grunt or a something, but at least I'd get, I think, the conversation that happens before we're going to be late again, where dad says, look, I don't want to face that woman again. Okay. So I just, let's just get there. Okay. Cause I don't want to talk to her anymore. But well, some things you just have to hold the line on is my point.
And Kathy, I want to bring up a point. As a business owner, it drives other employees crazy when another employee comes in late. They walk in late at the office. They walk in and So you can see that if they don't learn this early on and it spreads into their career, it will be a negative impact on their career and how people look at them. So this is a very important life skill that you're also trying to teach and to foster.
Yes. And respect and doing what you say, saying what you do, living up to your promises. Our mantra for respect is responsibility, empathy, self-control, being positive, showing your best effort, cooperation, and being trustworthy. And I don't think anybody could argue with any of those, but you need to display all of those second grade through fifth grade, and you get a respect award. You might get a respect award with honors or high honors, A's and B's, just B's, et cetera. And you might get it with exceptional effort, that you had excellent effort in nearly all of your classes. So when parents realize that the child is not getting the award, they get very upset, even though they've known throughout the quarter that if it is something that is episodic, like the child has been suspended from school. No, he's not getting an award. We can't clap when he walks up there to get it. Isn't that the child who got suspended because he had that thing on the butt? Yes, it is. Well, we can't think that that's going to be praised. There's a price to pay. But sometimes I've had to explain to parents, the award is not a given. It's not a trophy or a trinket to be handed out. It's something that is earned. And hopefully your child will work harder next time to earn this award.
My guest today is Dr. Kathy Corley. She is the author and principal of Red Cedar Elementary School. And she has a great book that we're going to get to and we're definitely going to talk about. It's called The Magical Place We Call School. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Dr. Kathy Corley. And as I said, she is the author and principal of Red Cedar Elementary School. And the book that she wrote is The Magical Place We Call School. And I also want to get to that musical piece because I have a thought on that as well. But before we go there, I'm sitting here interviewing you, and what I see behind you is all these beautiful words: whatever it takes, magic, responsibility, positive, kindness, discipline, makes sense. And also what I see is the word empathy. Mm-hmm. And we're in Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health just came out with a notice for everyone on empathy. And one of the parts that says, fostering empathy strengthens emotional literacy and helps young people open up about process and their feelings. It requires building trust with young people, is ongoing, takes time, and may fluctuate. Sometimes the adults may feel like they have taken two steps forward only to take three steps backwards. So all of a sudden, and you know, I feel very blessed because the program that I have in these schools is an empathy and parent engagement program. But now we've got the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health talking about it. Mm-hmm. So you talk about that crossing lines of having the program and having the need in the exact same place. How are you building and planting the seeds to these children? And the children that I work with are K-5 through a fourth and fifth grade. How are you helping these children to see the benefit when we're actually seeing parents don't really practice empathy? Empathy is something that's not taught, but it's modeled.
Absolutely. I was going to say those lessons happen every day. There are structured lessons from our counselor who teaches group counseling in classroom counseling by going classroom to classroom. And she has lessons on empathy as well as all the other traits that we would look for in students. But those lessons happen daily. They happen right before our eyes. And if it appears that someone is not showing empathy when they should, it's explained to them. It's explained what should happen. Let's say a child is walking with his tray of food in the cafeteria and he trips and he doesn't fall, but the tray does a flip and everything goes all over the place. There are children who will laugh first. There are children who will stifle the laugh because they understand that it would be rude to do that in all likelihood. If you really knew the child or if he was your brother or something, maybe. And if you're certain that he's not hurt, but you're not certain that he's not hurt emotionally.
Yes.
Because depending on his age, depending on what he believes is his social status, and yes, children as young as first and second grade believe they have a social status, he might not take this so well. So the grand majority of students here would start finding paper towels to help him clean it up. And they would ask if he's okay. Now, they might joke with him about that was pretty funny. And if we had a video of it, I would post it. And that could very well happen. But little story about this morning. I have a drum group that drum and dance. It's really drum and flags. And I lead the drummers. There are about 65 of them. The music teacher helps me. And he's on bass drum. So I'm playing a quad sort of thing, multiple tom-tom sort of thing. And all the children are third grade through fifth grade. There is a young lady who is a fifth grader who is blind, and she has been blind nearly from birth. She's from Honduras. She doesn't speak a whole lot of English, but she knows lots of musical words now. And she was developmentally delayed, so she does not have the intellect of a fifth grader. It's significantly lower than that. So she loves to play musical instruments, and I play musical instruments with her as often as I can. And we try to get her with other people who can play. And she, of course, learns by ear. She will play pretty much anything that she can hear, maybe four or five times. And she has her favorites. So she will call that out to me. And when she learns that there are words to the song and we can sing the song, she's delighted. She jumps up and down and dances. Well, the first time she came past the gym when we were playing drums, she started to walk in, and the person who was walking with her was trying to steer her another way. And I said, no, it's fine. She can come in. So she wanted to touch the drums. First, she touched my drums, and I had to be careful then not to hit her hands with my sticks, but to continue playing because she's feeling the vibration. Then she wanted to feel the students' drums. You could hear a pin drop from their voices, but they played the drums and all eyes were on her because they were there to witness her experiencing something for the first time. So every drum time since then, she plays with us. And the first time she came in after that, I set up a drum. It's sort of like a low tom. It sort of resonates like a bass drum. And she had sticks. She has to wear headphones because it's too loud, because she has some sensory issues, but she loves to hear the drums. So she plays that drum. Then I added a cymbal to it. She was in heaven then. Now there are students who get her drum and her cymbals and her sticks out. And then they bring her chair over and they help her to her chair. She's learning to use a cane. And there was a boy today, Adler, was waiting. And I thought he wanted to talk to me. And I didn't realize Adler was waiting to hand the girl her stick because he wanted to make sure that she had it, that she didn't have to reach toward the wall for it or take a step to find it. So in what I've just explained in about 2.5 minutes, that's a huge lesson in empathy. And now they ask questions the other students ask questions of their teachers or of Alexia's teacher.
And that's modeling.
Absolutely.
Do you know, Kathy, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, knowing that you are into music, and I think I read somewhere that they call you the Pied Piper of music or something. But one of the things that I've become aware of is that just like an adult, we have trouble talking about our feelings. We have trouble in sharing that. We have trouble in making it public, I guess you would say. A lot of times children, well, always children do have that same type of an issue of sharing, but there's something magical, literally, about children being able to do it through art and to be able to do it through music. And so often that's one of the first programs that are cut in schools. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the importance of that, sometimes we think of it as just like an extra little thing out there, but particularly for these kindergartners in first and second and third and fourth grade, the things that they draw are truly magical and beautiful. And it gives the teachers and parents an insight into what they're really thinking and feeling.
Yes, absolutely. Music has been a way of expression for many of our students, art as well. Some of our students are facile in both. Many students are not great at either of those things, and it matters not, because it should be something that blesses them throughout their lives, because they started playing or singing in elementary school and they continue on. Because we have a relationship with the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra, we are able to provide after-school instrumental lessons for third, fourth, and fifth graders. They pay for the instruments, and they pay for the teacher, and they pay for the books, and they pay for the stands. So our music teacher has two groups that he sees on Mondays and Wednesdays, and two groups that he sees on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and one group that he sees on Fridays. So they learn to play the violin or any of the wind instruments, and they play concerts. And when we attend symphony orchestra concerts, they put in a part for our violinists. Last year, it was Carmina Burana, O Fortuna, and it was wonderful. And we also got to play the recorders, and people don't appreciate recorders as much as they should. I still play mine today. Mine is in the drawer, and I might play that, or a flute, or a clarinet, or a saxophone, or whatever it is I grab when children are coming in the morning or when they're leaving in the afternoon. And lots of times they ask me, how did you learn to do that? The same way you learned to walk, the same way you learned to read. You just started doing it and then you practiced it. So you can do this too.
My guest today is, I've got to go and get this, is Dr. Kathy Corley, and she is the author and principal of the Red Circle Elementary School, but she's also the author of The Magical Place We Call School. And as we've been talking, I think you can really start to feel why it's magical without her even telling. It's her enthusiasm and the love that she has for the children and her creative, curious way of instilling fun into the classroom. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. There's two things that I just want to cover before we get into the book, and that's, you had talked about the kids with the little child fell with his lunch tray, that the kids would have said, if I would have had the camera, I would have videoed this and, you know, and put it out there. And I think that in many cases it, you know, that could be a really challenging thing for children, because I can remember a couple of things that I did in grade school that the kids teased me about, and they teased me the next day. But by the third day, somebody else had already done something dopey and they'd forgotten about me. But now everything gets online and sometimes things are never forgotten. And I also want to just talk about the impact that you've seen that COVID has had on students. And that was one of the things that they stressed within the article in the New York Times about absenteeism, that there was a lot to do with COVID and the impression that had. So with that, we're going to take a really quick break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And if you're just tuning in, you might be saying, what in the heck is she talking about today? Schools and children in schools. But you know, this is our future. And when we talk about money and money sense, it really does make sense to bring the awareness to parents out there, to grandparents. As a grandparent myself, I'm always very careful about the things that I say and the things that I do. But as grandparents, you can volunteer, you can read to your grandkids, you can become an active part of their life and an active part of the schools. And as parents, I hope that you're able to maybe see yourself in some of the things that my guest today, Dr. Kathy Corley, is talking about. And those are the things that are positive, the things like, yeah, I got it right. And maybe there's some of the things that you can say to yourself, boy, I could be a little bit better about that because I didn't quite know the impact that it has on my child when they're late or if their homework isn't done or if you don't show up. You know, there's nothing worse than when I'm doing these events at schools and, you know, there's 10, 15, 20 kids that don't have parents that have shown up and they do notice the difference. Dr. Kathy, let's just talk about those two topics that I had brought up that, you know, the kids in the video and this lifelong retention of something goofy that's happened or teasing or bullying, that has to be a challenge for you.
That's one of the reasons that technology, while it is wonderful, we're using it right now to our benefit, can also be pretty awful. If you have a group of five friends, girls who are fifth graders, 11, 12 years old, they are very in tune with what each other wears, what each other watches on their videos, what each other is interested in, and they don't wish to stray very far from that. It takes a rare, rare child to say, you know, I don't totally agree with that group. I'm going to be my own person. And I cut the sleeves off my sweatshirt a la Belichick. And that's what I feel like wearing around the house. And all my friends would think that's terrible. That's absolutely fine. Be the renegade. But it's not encouraged. And it's not the adults who are doing that so much. Yes, we wear uniforms to school here. And that's to cut down on that kind of nonsense. There are kids who cannot compete. We're a Title I school, so we have about 58% students who would qualify for free or reduced lunch. In our case, everyone gets the lunch because a number of our schools have a special arrangement for that to happen. But we don't want those children singled out because they can't keep up with other students in so far as the way they dress. But if the phones, by the way, phones are not allowed here. That is, you can sign, if you're the mom, you can sign the piece of paper that says, I agree to the following. The phone stays in the book bag all day and it's off. Well, right there, some parents go, well, then why bother? You're right. Why bother? We would appreciate you don't darken our door with this because they are trouble. Where I'm going with this is if everything about all our lives is video-able and post-able by our friends, by our relatives, by people who wish to do that, it, I think, changes perhaps what our actions are. For some people, it makes them ridiculously unsafe. Anything that follows, hey, watch this, is probably going to be something that's a bad idea. So it sort of encourages that kind of behavior. And that might be fun to watch, but it wasn't fun for the person who got injured when they did it. And they'll still post it, even though they're injured. So it is tricky in these times to have people think for themselves and run it past their conscience. When something happens, sometimes we'll talk to a 5 or 6 year old and ask, why did you hit that person? I don't know. He was being mean to me. What does that mean? He wouldn't play with me. Well, he doesn't have to play with you. How did he turn you down? What did he say? He said he was going to play with Jeffrey instead. Well, that's okay. He could, my mom said, I get to play with whoever I want to play with. Well, I'm sorry, but here it's not going to be that way. And we talked to mom about how that might not work in the real world either, but that's an adult to adult conversation. But the child might say, my stomach hurt right after I hit him. And I'll say, you know what that is? That's your conscience. That's the thing inside you that tells you what's right and what's wrong. And when you do something that's wrong, it says, hey, wait, Thomas, hold up. You want to think about that before you go any further down this road, because it's not the thing to do. Sometimes if the child is sort of not being honest about a thing, especially an older child, I'll say, how's your stomach feeling right now? Not so good. Really? Tell me about it. Well, it kind of hurts. I was fine before. Did you have breakfast? Yeah. Did you have lunch? Yeah. Okay. Why do you think your stomach is hurting? I don't know. Well, that's your conscience. And what you did was not cool. And unless you want to feel that on a regular basis, you'll stop doing that thing, because that stomach thing is going to happen all the time, which is a very good sign, because that tells me you know right from wrong. And you probably knew it when you did it, but you did it anyway. And you were just angry. You wanted to get even. That never works.
Do you think that children know who they are?
It's harder for them to come to those realizations, I think, in the last 10 or 15 years, I think. Too much of their selfhood is shaped perhaps by what they think others think of them.
Yes.
That's not terrible, because what people think of you is a little bit important, but not to the point of, come on, you need to go along with us. Because that's when the 14-year-old gets in the car, knowing that these guys are shady characters, not knowing for sure that they're going to knock over the liquor store, but not knowing for sure that they're going to church either. So you have to decide before you get in the car. You know, a piece of this is reputation, but a piece of this is self-preservation. You really need to think about what you're doing. There were kids who were involved in a very silly thing not long ago, our fifth graders, the pinching game. So, and I think you had to kind of sort of like somebody. So this is a way to avoid a boy saying to a girl, I like you, or a girl saying to a boy, I like you, because they're not ready. They're 11. They're not ready for that. So they pinch, and not only pinch, but twist. So they're making bruises. So when we found out about it, we had a little word of prayer with them. Yes, it's public school, but that's what I call it. I don't call it that to them, but to the adults I do. A come to Jesus meeting. And we have a space for that. It's called the sunny spot, because there's a lot of glass there. And the fourth graders say, oh no, we're going to the sunny spot, meaning it must be bad news. In this case, it was fifth graders. And we said, we went class to class. Anybody who was involved in the pinching game, come outside, come and talk to us to the sunny spot. There were something like 30 children out of 100. And we said, if you were just pinched and you did not pinch anyone, sit over here. If you pinch someone, sit over there. There were just a few who were in the pinching group. There were many who were in the being pinched group. I addressed them first. And I said, what other physical things will you let people do to you that will harm you? Where do you draw the line? Stabbed with a pencil? Hit? Kicked? Bite? Where does it stop? And they're kind of, and I don't think they were thinking like because you have to let somebody pinch you. A pinch, as soon as somebody's grabbing for me with their fingers, I'm stepping away, no matter how old I am. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? When a child says, and they don't say by accident, they say on accident. On accident, I pinched her. A five-year-old may say, on accident, I pinched her. No, let's work through that. And I'll use a stuffed animal and go, okay, first your fingers have to be there. Then they have to close on the skin of the person. So it's a two-step thing. Which part was the accident? I don't know. Truth is, it wasn't an accident. You wish it was an accident, but it wasn't. So you kind of have to sort all of it out. And the kids who did it had an in-school suspension because it's part of the district's discipline program, which aligns with the state discipline program. A pinch is the same as a kick or a bite, and it's at least a half day in school suspension. And those children were very surprised. They didn't have the audacity to say, well, it was just a game, which you might hear sometimes. I was just kidding. You were just kidding when you tripped him. You were just kidding, or you were just kidding when you called him that name. Really? Really? How well do you know him? Do you know if he has a pet at home? No. Do you know his mom's name? No. Do you know where he lives? No. You don't know him. You don't know him. He's not your brother. He's not your sister. He's not your cousin. I'm not advocating you doing nasty things to those people, but you know them fairly well. So you can probably get a little grace in doing those things until an adult says, now stop it. But the thing is, you don't know when to stop. So you hit, and what is he going to do? Has it ever worked for you that somebody said something to you, you hit them and it stopped and they went, oh, you're right. I was bad. I'm sorry for calling you that name.
Wow. My guest today, and I do want you know what, we went over our time just a little bit so that we can keep on going. And I do want to touch on what's happened since COVID, because I think all parents and all schools, and based on that article, it's not schools and districts like you are, it's across the board that COVID has had an impact. And with that, we'll take a quick break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and the senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And we are talking about a topic that is very dear to my heart. And I have to say that I feel like for many years, I existed in a bubble. I had no idea of what the impact of certain things were having on schools and the difficulties that schools and teachers, administrators, parents, communities were facing. I say it was like Pandora's box. It opened up and I couldn't shut it. And so I jumped in with both feet. And I'm very interested in the topic that we are looking at today. My guest is Dr. Kathy Corley, and she is the principal of Red Cedar Elementary School. She's also an author, and it's just a lovely book, The Magical Place We Call School. And I hope, Dr. Corley, that you're not sitting there saying, is she ever going to get to my book? But the reality is we have been talking about your book all the way through.
Yes.
And you have been giving us examples of how you minister and administer to your students, to your teachers, and how it is communicated and how it sort of leaks out and spreads to the community. Before we go on to the book, if you could just take a minute and give us kind of an overview of COVID.
The schools that were well set up and doing well, attendance was in place, achievement was great, their expectations were high, didn't have as much trouble getting through COVID as the schools, predictably, who didn't have all those things in place. COVID had a way of being a bit of an eye-opener in lots of ways, in probably every single facet of our lives, that if things weren't going well, they were going really badly during COVID, because it exposed vulnerabilities. So businesses, for example, that weren't doing as well, they may have shut their doors because it wasn't going to work anymore. They were hanging on by a thread. In our case, when everything shut down on a Friday, March 13th, Friday the 13th, that's how it was for us, when the governor said, we're not going back to school on Monday. We had anticipated it slightly, and we put some things into place. The second graders had never taken their laptops home. They used them in school, but they hadn't taken them home. So we had to show them how to charge them, show them what they needed to do with the laptops. And we had a very quick workshop with them before they left. Kindergartners, first graders, pre-K students, we had to do something else with them. Kindergartners and first graders took, some had iPads at home, but the iPads we have here won't work off of our campus. So we had to get everything in line. We also had a number of people, eight people, who went out to people's homes and had porch visits, and the folks who live there would be in the house, have the door open and say, "We can't seem to get on. You need to try unplugging, then you need to plug it back in. Oh, well, you know, we don't have Wi-Fi. That's the reason you're not on. Let's get you a Wi-Fi hotspot." And we had some local vendors who helped us out with that. And eventually the state came through for hotspots. We had to go through extraordinary means because the parents and the grandparents in particular, who are not as technologically literate, they're not technological natives like our students are, were somewhat at a loss. And sometimes the little ones pulled the wool over their eyes, like shutting the volume down on the computer and going, I can't do it today because I can't hear anybody. So we would have to troubleshoot and go, oh yeah, let me fix that. Child go, ugh. But they needed to get on. So we needed to offer as much support as we possibly could, which was over and above, far and away, more than we would give ordinarily just to keep people online. And some people we lost and we needed to get them back.
Thank you so much. And I know that we could talk a whole show on that, but I do want to talk. We've got about 4 minutes left. I want you to be able to talk about your book. I'm not even going to ask you why you wrote it, because it's very obvious why you wrote it. But what do you hope that the book will accomplish? Who are the people that you hope that you can touch? And what is the outcome you're looking for?
First, I need to give a disclaimer. We are not the only magical school on the planet. There are many, and lots of people don't know where they are. And I would advise your listeners to hop on by your local elementary school and ask if there's anything that they can do to assist the teachers, the students, and the community itself, because they would be crazy if they turned you down. You may not be able to volunteer just this minute, but you will be able to assist. I want teachers to read the book and say, oh, for God's sake, absolutely, yes, 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 yes. I've had this experience before, and I wish I would have known this. Or, oh, I have a better idea for how to address this problem. I would like administrators to read the book, especially if they're the kind of people who don't support their teachers, because that's the thing that teachers need the most, support from their administrators. I'd like policymakers to read the book for the same reason. And I'd like parents to read the book so they see all the things that go on behind the curtain. There's a lot going on behind the curtain that they might not know and maybe don't understand. When we try to do our best for students while making sure we are doing our best for all students. Sometimes parents have a slightly myopic view when it comes to what they want for their child. Sometimes somebody has to lose if their child wins, as it were. And we need to make sure that everybody gets what they need, which is not all the same.
And I believe it's so important to emphasize the importance that parents participate, go to the school, go to those teachers' conferences. I know all the schools are struggling with parent involvement and getting the kids and the parents together. For those parents that don't show up at some of these events, and I go to these events and they're not even my kids, the kids' eyes are like puppy dogs when you come home. They are so proud and excited to see you there.
Yes, I make a speech, speech 137A, to the parents. The brief version is, thank you so much for being here. There are lots of places you could be today, but this is the place you chose to be, and your children love it. They may not show you now, but they will show you later, particularly when they're raising your grandchildren, and they say, Mom, I've got to get off the phone right now, because there's a program at school, and Jonathan is going to be on stage. Talk to you later.
Oh, how wonderful. My guest today is Dr. Kathy Corley, over 44 years, I think it was more than 44 years of experience in education. She is the author of an absolutely fabulous book, The Magical Place We Call School. You know, I was telling Dr. Corley that I would like to give out these books to every one of the teachers and the principals to share. But, you know, it's cost prohibitive for me to do that. But I just had an idea. What about, as you, my listeners, you buy the book and give it to your student's teacher or give it to the principal of the school. I can't cover everybody, but you, as my listeners who've been listening to me for 34 years, thank you very much, could do that. You could buy the book and you could get one in every school. So Dr. Corley, thank you so much for being my guest. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. And listen to your kids. And with that, have a great weekend. Bye.